Welcome to Relationships 2.0. I'm Michelle Steen. My special guest today is Stephanie Sarkis. I've had her on the show before, so you can go to my website, michelleskeen.com, and find the podcast with Stephanie. But she has a new book out called Natural Relief for Adult ADHD, Complementary Strategies for Increasing Focus, Attention, and Motivation with or Without Medication. Welcome back, Stephanie. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Michelle.
And let's do a shout-out for your website as long as we're on it.
It's StephanieSarkis.com, StephanieSarkis.com.
What was your motivation for writing this book? It's a great book, by the way.
Thank you. My motivation was I've had several patients ask me about what they can do instead of medication or along with medication. There actually are quite a few researched treatments that look at more the holistic overall health of someone, and in addition to medication or to be used without medication.
How do you have a feeling about medication? Do you have a strong feeling? Like, do you think that it's overprescribed? Do you think, what are your thoughts about medication for ADHD?
The majority research does show that medication is the most effective treatment because ADHD is a neurological, biological, genetic disorder. But there are also other treatments that do have more research coming out now showing, again, that they can be used with or without medication. The rate of diagnosis of ADHD is actually underdiagnosed rather than overdiagnosed.
Only about 10% of people. I was surprised to read that in your book. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just saying I was surprised to read that in your book that it's, because the feeling is that it's overdiagnosed.
Right, and that's a common perception. Again, yeah, only 10% of people are diagnosed in the first year they realize they have symptoms. So pretty shocking findings.
Yeah, and the other thing that really surprised me is, so the highest rate of ADHD is in Brazil.
Right. It's between 3 to 6%, regardless of what country you go to. So it's not just the United States issue. It's found around the world in equal amounts.
That's really interesting. You had your overview chapter at the very beginning has some really interesting facts in it. And that brings me to the point that you did a tremendous amount of research for this book. And it shows, and I think that's really helpful for people as the foreword author noted that there is so much information out there. I would imagine it's really overwhelming to have someone with your qualifications sift through all of that and highlight the most meaningful facts about adult ADHD is really terrific.
Thank you. Yeah, and I wanted to write it too in a way that people, again, could feel like they were not overwhelmed. They could read a little bit and put the book down, pick it up again, look at some other research for other topics. So it's written pretty much with an ADHD audience in mind.
You know, it's so great when authors do that, when they're really thinking about the state of mind of the reader. You know, I had an author on the show who wrote a book for people who are dealing with grief. And apparently that's one of the things when you're dealing with grief is you have a really short attention span. And so she made the chapters very short and made it so you could kind of pick it up and put it down, just like you did your book. And you mentioned that in the book, and I think it's so great.
Yeah, I've had people tell me this is the first book that they've read all the way through, and because they can pick up and read little bits and then put it down, pick it up again. And again, like you said, yeah, there's a lot of research that I've cited backing up these non-medication treatments, or in some cases, research that doesn't back up some of the non-medication treatments. So the book not only talks about what works, but also what really doesn't have a lot of data behind it.
Mm-hmm. So, were there any surprises for you as you were going through the research? Was there something that you, didn't expect to find?
I think the biggest thing I found was that sleep habits and changing the way that you get ready for bed and how you sleep can make a huge difference on your attention. I mean, I knew that there was some influence, but there's quite a large influence. A majority of people with ADHD have sleep disorders. So things like even shutting off backlit electronic devices an hour before bed can even help you get to bed or go to sleep quicker. So those kinds of things, you know, these little things that you don't think really add up to much, they really add up in the long term to being able to focus better when you do practice good sleep habits.
Well,
and
I
also,
mean,
I knew exercise was helpful, but I didn't realize how much. Even exercising 15 to 30 minutes can boost your brain chemical levels, and those brain chemicals are low naturally in ADHD. So it's not even that you have to do an hour of exercise. You could do 15 minutes taking the stairs instead of the elevator and get benefits from that.
Well, you're bringing up two really important aspects of just general population well-being, but when you look at maybe the specific challenges of people with ADHD and getting a good night's sleep. So let's start there. One of the things that before we start there, let me just say that one of the facts that really surprised me about people with ADHD is that they're more likely to be obese.
Right. Four times more likely to be overweight or obese, and also four times more likely to have eating disorders, too.
So let's talk about sleep. I mean, when people don't get enough sleep, they do have a tendency to overeat. I think studies have shown that you're more... I know it's true for me. You're more drawn to like simple carbohydrates and sugars to get like a, you know, quick fix or try and get some energy. So not getting a good night's sleep certainly impacts stress hormones and what we're drawn to in terms of food. But why is it more challenging for people with ADHD, and what are specific things that they can do?
Well, one of the issues is that there's a hormone in the brain called melatonin, and that kicks in when you're about to go to sleep. So it just kind of gets your body ready for sleepy time. And people with ADHD have what's called inhibited release of melatonin. They don't have enough melatonin that kind of pops out of their brain to help them get to sleep. So supplements that are over-the-counter have not been found to be effective, but there are some studies showing that melatonin, prescription melatonin, may be effective in helping people with ADHD get to sleep. And also, like I mentioned, shutting off electronics an hour before bed is important, because using backlit devices right before you go to sleep also inhibits melatonin production. So you kind of use logic and say, well, you know, if you're ADHD, you already have inhibited melatonin, then use a backlit device that could make your insomnia even worse or more difficulties getting to sleep initially.
So even like a Kindle that has, you know, that's lit up isn't good, right?
Right. Now, the devices that aren't backlit, like the Kindle Paperwhites, those didn't
okay.
have any kind of inhibition on melatonin. It was specifically the backlit devices, whether that's a laptop, whether it's a phone, a TV, anything that emits light. It kind
right.
of tricks your brain into thinking that it's sunlight, so it stays awake.
And is any kind of, is auditory stimulation okay? Like if someone's listening to a podcast or something like that, is that okay for them or not so much?
What's interesting is having some kind of sound on in the background can actually help people with ADHD focus better, because it blocks out all those little noises, in the background, like the house creaking or, you know, branch tapping on the window. So it really depends on the person with ADHD, but a lot of them find if they have a white noise app going, if they have a low-level music in the background, they're actually able to focus better and can help them go to sleep, too, especially if you listen to something like a relaxation, a guided imagery, audio file before you go to bed. That can also get you more into a sleepy state.
Oh, that's a good idea as well. So reading's okay if it's not backlit. So if you're using like a book light or something, if you're reading like a regular book, if they're reading your book, they can read your book, right, and still and go to sleep.
Of course, especially if you read it in the sleep chapter, it might have some kind of subliminal effects on you. That'll be my next study.
What are some other challenges for, or other specific things that make it easier or better for people to go to sleep? Do you like the blackout drapes and all of that for people with ADHD, or does that not matter as much?
Right. You just hit the nail on the head. Having a completely dark room is one of the things that helps people get to sleep. A lot of people are getting the curtains now that have the facing on them, like hotel curtains, to block out right. the sunlight. Also, going to bed at the same time every night and getting up at the same time every morning, even on weekends, has been found to be really helpful because your body cannot compensate for different sleep-wake times on the weekends. So you wind up being chronically sleep-deprived. And also just having a relaxing activity before bed, whether that's snuggling with your kids, reading a book, again, a non-backlit device or real book, that can also help you transition into that sleepy time.
Okay. And it's easier to go to sleep if you've exerted yourself at some point during the day. So let's talk about exercise. And I'm really interested in you sharing all of the studies that you uncovered about the link between ADHD and exercise.
Sure. Exercise is one of the most researched and also most valid treatments for ADHD, non-medication treatments. Again, even exercising 15 to 30 minutes can help raise your brain chemical levels. And also, again, it's simple things like taking the stairs instead of the elevator, parking further away from your office and walking in. That counts as exercise. And again, that can be enough to help you have increased focus. So what I tell people to do is to exercise first thing in the morning, because then you get more of the benefits of those brain chemical boosts right. throughout the day. So yeah. also studies have found that exercise helps improve your executive function skills. And those are different skills in the frontal lobe of the brain that are impaired in ADHD, like planning, thinking ahead, also keeping yourself on an even mood instead of having a little bit of a mood swing. So exercise helps, again, with the executive functions of the brain as well.
Can we go back a little bit? And I'd love for you to explain to our listeners, just the specifics of ADHD. Again, I think everyone has heard so much about it, but what are the signs? And also, I'm curious, did they change a lot from the DSM-4 to the DSM-5?
The DSM-4 to 5, the symptoms are the same and the types of ADHD are the same, but you need to have symptoms now prior to the age of 12 instead of 7, and that's one of the biggest changes. Also, you need to have 5 out of 9 symptoms if you are 18 or 17 or older, and a 6 out of 9 if you are 16 and younger, and 5 out of 9 symptoms if you're 17 and older, which means you may see more adults that now meet the criteria for ADHD that didn't before because they kind of fell through the cracks. But the inattentive type of ADHD, those are symptoms like difficulty with losing items, difficulty sustaining focus when it's needed, difficulty paying attention to detail. There's the hyperactive impulsive type, which are things like either excessive running and climbing, or for adults, having a sense of inner restlessness. Also, blurring out answers to questions, interrupting. And the combined type means that you meet criteria for the inattentive type and the hyperactive impulsive type. So, again, those types have not changed.
When you say excessive running or climbing, are you talking about physical activity?
It's more along the lines of doing daredevil kind of behavior. So, climbing a little too high up in a tree or doing things that are potentially dangerous. Or it could just mean that there's this endless cycle of energy that doesn't seem to shut off. So it's going above and beyond just standard playing. It's getting yourself in a situation
so some
you might
kind
get
of,
hurt.
Well, is that more of a child thing than an adult thing, or you see that with adults?
Yeah,
too?
So what the DSM has done in the new edition, DSM-5, is that they've added excessive running and climbing or internal restlessness. Because it's very common for a lot of adults with ADHD. In my practice, they've told me that they just have this sense of restlessness. They have to get up and move. It's just an itch they have to scratch. So I think that's a great way to describe an internal restlessness.
You know, we're going to take a short break, and we'll continue this when we come back. You're listening to Stephanie Sarkis. She is the author of many great books on ADHD, but we're talking about natural relief for adult ADHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're invited to join Michelle Skeen, psychologist, author, and host of Relationships 2.0 on this station. On Michelle's radio show, she has guests who present their unique perspective and expertise on topics that cover all aspects of relationships. If you want to improve your relationships, and let's face it, we all have room for improvement. Tune in to Relationships 2.0 with Dr. Michelle Skeen. If you miss Michelle's show, or if you're interested in listening to past podcasts, you can go to her website at www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com. So listen to Michelle's podcast or keep listening right where you're at. Relationships 2.0. Tune in and improve your relationships.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Do you tend to overreact and let your emotions rule your interactions with others? Do you become defensive or find it difficult to see things from another's point of view? You're not alone. Despite the fact that we all have to deal with people in our daily lives, many of us have difficulties with interpersonal relationships. My suggestion? Pick up a copy of the Interpersonal Problems Workbook. This workbook combines powerful evidence-based techniques for strengthening relationships in all areas of your life, whether it's at home or work, with a significant other, a parent, or your child. To find out more about the Interpersonal Problems Workbook, go to www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com. Pick up a copy and improve your relationships.
Welcome back to Relationships 2.0. I'm chatting with Stephanie Sarkis, PhD, about her book, Natural Relief for Adult ADHD. So as we went to break, Stephanie, you were talking about for adults often this feeling of internal restlessness. And I would imagine, and you discuss it in your book, but that could have some implications for relationships in the person's life who is, you know, struggling with ADHD. What does it look like, and what are some of the specific challenges in relationships for people with ADHD?
Well, there are quite a few communication issues. I talked about executive functions before the break, and again, those are different aspects of the frontal lobe of the brain that impact or impaired in ADHD. And one of those is called reconstitution of information, which means I tell you something, and then you're able to repeat it back to me in the correct way that I said it. And that's impaired in ADHD. So you have partner A telling partner B, you know, pick up Johnny from school at 5 on Friday, and Johnny still hang out at school at 5 on Friday, because partner B thought that that was for next Friday, they thought it was at 6. It's a lot of issues of miscommunication, and that can cause a lot of dissatisfaction in relationships. And people with ADHD and the people in the relationships with them both rate a higher level of relationship dissatisfaction compared to people that don't have ADHD. So it really gets to be quite a problem.
And then you even talk in your book about for the person with ADHD, how they could recognize someone who maybe isn't supportive of them, and people that they might want to end relationships with. Could you say more about that?
Right, sure. People with ADHD will find that some people are accepting of the fact that they have ADHD and will work with them, and sometimes they find, unfortunately, that people either don't believe it's a valid diagnosis or believe that the person is willfully not doing things. And in those cases, it's important to take a look at whether you really have a healthy relationship or not. And also, people with ADHD may be prone to getting into relationships where they become controlling and dependent, meaning that sometimes they seek out someone that's good at finances or is good at organizing, but sometimes it can go a little too far and become one where there's withholding of money and other issues. So it's just important for people with ADHD to really take a good look at whether their relationship is healthy or not.
And you discuss that people with ADHD can have impulse control issues.
Right. Impulse control issues mean they have a higher rate of having affairs, also more difficulties with impulsive spending, and, of course, those can cause big issues in relationships.
So gambling might be something that people with ADHD do, or I think we even talked about this when you were on the show before, like online shopping, maybe for some people, like lots of spending.
Right, a lot of sneaky spending too sometimes. Buying big ticket items and not telling your partner or spouse. And eventually those purchases come out and that usually starts a conflict. So people with ADHD will do impulsive spending because it's kind of a form of self-medication. They're raising their brain chemicals. But, you know, that boost of brain chemicals is really temporary. And unfortunately they have the consequences of that that follow up later.
And this must be where the exercise comes in, where this is a healthier alternative to boost some of those brain chemicals, right?
Right. And again, a lot of the treatments, you know, it's interesting. One person gets help, the whole dynamic of the relationship changes. And that's something to keep in mind. And also, when people are together and let's say one person's interested in going to couples counseling, the other person doesn't want to go, you know, what I recommend is going on your own. Because again, the fact that you're making changes can change the dynamic. And sometimes you find a relationship improves and sometimes you find that it's just not a good fit anymore. So again, it's really important for people to go out and seek help, and that seeking help is a strength rather than a weakness.
Absolutely. So it must be, I mean, this is a very specific population that you treat. And I'm just thinking that at times you must find it challenging to guide the person so that they're understanding what their challenges are, but they're not using their deficits as an excuse for everything. So I'm thinking about you as a therapist. I'm also thinking about maybe a frustrated partner, you know, where you feel it would even be the case of like someone who struggles with depression, like that person always has a built-in reason why they're doing something. So how do you deal with that?
I explain to people that having ADHD is just one characteristic of you, that you are a lot of other things besides ADHD, and also having ADHD doesn't give you a free pass. If you've hurt somebody's feelings, you still need to apologize in an appropriate way, but also take responsibility for your behavior and seek treatment. Treatment has been found to be quite effective for helping with ADHD, and again, it's something that you sometimes don't have control over, but you still need to take responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like your book is really empowering the person with ADHD to make changes that will significantly positively impact their life.
Right, and then turn that impacts relationship with partner, spouse, impacts relationship with the children, because even parenting is impacted by ADHD. Sometimes parents find it difficult to be consistent with parenting because they're having issues themselves. So I always liken it to, you know, when you're in an airplane, they tell you to put your oxygen mask on before your kids. It's the same thing with mental health. You know, you need to take care of your own stuff so you can be the best parent you can be.
And I would imagine that growing up as a child with a parent who has ADHD would have some really specific challenges. I mean, some of the characteristics that you note in the book, like being disorganized, that would be really difficult for a kid to grow up in a household where the parent is really disorganized, the household's disorganized.
Well, and sometimes kids feel, too, that they're part of the family because they're disorganized like everybody else. But over time, it's really important that they are able to pick up on those organization skills. So, again, it's really important that people seek treatment and learn more about ADHD. And also, I found parent-child relationships where both have ADHD and they have a real tight bond, and also they can get on each other's nerves because they're so similar, too. So that can be an issue as well. So you can have different facets of relationship issues when you have ADHD in kids.
One of the things I underlined in your book, because I hadn't heard it like this before, is that ADHD is actually a motivation disorder, not an attention disorder.
Right, and those are those executive functions I talked about in the frontal lobe of the brain. Part of the things that they do is they help motivate you and also inhibit your behavior, stop you from doing stuff, kind of like an internal stop sign before you take an action. So when you have motivation issues, that means that your brain can't get started on something that it needs to do, that it's just not getting excited by. And also it means that you can get over-motivated and hyper-focused, too. And hyper-focusing is just as much of a symptom as lack of focus.
And also,
hyper-focusing can have just as detrimental effects as lack of focus as well. So, again, hyper-focusing or paying too much attention to stuff can also be a symptom.
So the hyper-focus and paying too much attention to stuff, does it tend to be a hyper-focus on something that's not productive or helpful?
It can be something that the person's really interested in, like a hobby or something they enjoy reading. And this is kind of like being in the zone, but times a thousand, meaning that if a person's name's being called, they can't hear them. They may not even hear their own children crying. You know, biologically, we're wired to pay attention when our own kid cries. So, again, it can be quite detrimental. So, again, hyper-focusing can cause quite a few issues for people with ADHD because that motivation piece can't shut off and move on to another task.
So, I mean, that just makes me think about, you must have some clients who are new parents and, you know, that period of time when you have the newborn and you're a brand new parent, you haven't done this before, plus you also, if you also have ADHD, there must be some very specific things that you do with those clients of yours to kind of train them in an even different way than just basic new parent training.
Sure, and add in the fact that you're chronically sleep deprived of the newborn too, and that sleep deprivation can look a lot like ADHD or makes you look like you have ADHD plus. And you know, your brain does some wacky stuff when you can't pay attention. So, yeah, it's really important that new parents find some time to practice some good self-care. And self-care is kind of tricky for people with ADHD anyway, because that means you got to pay attention to the self. And it's hard enough paying attention to everything in your environment without having to check in with yourself and seeing if you're thirsty, hungry, if you need sleep, do you need to take a time out for yourself. So it's really important that people with ADHD learn how to do those things.
And so what do you attribute, when you said like thirsty or hungry, then made me think that, oh, maybe these people forget to eat and yet the obesity rate is high. So are they not in touch with their own, like their own signals about whether they're hungry or thirsty?
It can be in part not being in touch with their own signals. It also could be, too, that if you wait till you're starving before you eat, you tend to binge more. Okay. And also, studies have found that when you eat foods high in refined sugar, it mimics in the brain the same reaction you would get to doing illegal drugs. So it does provide some type of boost or self-medication form. So that's why it's really important that people pay attention to the self and eat in smaller portions and eat in a healthy manner. And that helps not just people with ADHD, but everyone. But particularly people with ADHD do have difficulties kind of monitoring or moderating their eating.
So one of the other things you mentioned, too, is that they have more cases, or teenagers with ADHD have a higher rate of unplanned pregnancy, and adults with ADHD are more likely to have sexually transmitted diseases.
Right. If you look at that impulsivity and issue with inhibition, you know, perfect storm for unplanned pregnancy and STDs. You know, not taking birth control on a regular basis, not using condoms, so it can create a lot of issues. And STDs also relates to the fact that people with ADHD have more social anxiety than the general population. So, and also a higher medical cost, too, not just related to ADHD treatment. So it all kind of ends up in this big ball of issues. So it's really important that we really key into what exactly is impacting the person with ADHD and what's the best treatment for them.
Right. So we were talking earlier about medication and how helpful that is. We also know that's helpful for everyone, right? Everyone performs at a higher level, whether they have ADHD or not, when they take the medication. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, and also they can kick their dopamine up too high if they take stimulants when they're not supposed to, or if they take them, you know, as if they're not prescribed them, they have the potential of kicking their dopamine up too high, which can result in things like auditory hallucinations and also sensation of bugs crawling under your skin. But when you have ADHD, your dopamine level is already low. So when you take medication, you're helping raise it back up to where a non-ADHD person's dopamine level would be. So yeah, if you don't have ADHD, it can help you focus, but you also run the risk of taking too much, or getting too much dopamine.
Well, you know, this is a big problem at, high schools and colleges where there's a lot of pressure to perform, that these are the drugs that the kids who don't have the prescriptions are buying.
Yeah, and studies have found that the last study I saw about this was 60,000 college students. They found that there was a 7 to 8% illicit use of stimulants on campus. Now, it appears to be more than that in the media, but it is around 7 to 8%. And the majority of people using illicit stimulants said that they had stolen it from a friend or roommate. So just something to think about, too, is that I tell people with ADHD that are college students, make sure you keep your medication in a secure location. Do not tell your friends or roommates that you're taking it because you may know your friends and roommates, but you don't know their friends. So really important that they keep it locked down.
Yeah, and there are those like little safes you can get for your dorm room, too, that they could put it in. But, yeah, I mean, that's really a big deal. It's interesting that the numbers are so low. I mean, this must be frustrating. Since this is your area of, your specialty, it must be frustrating for you at times to hear these stories that makes it sound like there's so much of this going on, you know, that there's an overdiagnosis of ADHD, that the drug people are, you know, kids, high school and college kids are using these drugs to perform better on standardized tests or just in general, even though they don't have ADHD.
One of the biggest issues is that there's now a nationwide shortage on stimulant prescriptions. The DEA allots a certain amount of chemical to the pharmaceutical companies, and the FDA has said to the DEA, hey, you don't even have enough chemical that you're releasing to fill legitimate prescriptions, and the DEA says tough. So at this point, it's very difficult sometimes for people to get their prescriptions filled. And there is an email that people can write to at the FDA. It's drugshortages@fda.hhs.gov, and what they tell them is, you know, what medication they are short on, what the dosage is, and the address of their pharmacy, because it is going to be a problem that medication is not available in places that people need it. And I think in part it's due to this idea that everybody's abusing it. So it makes it difficult for people to have legitimate issues to get their medication.
Oh, see, now this is the kind of stuff, this is so great, Stephanie, just like with your book, these are like real facts that need to get out there that can be helpful to people instead of just hearing these kind of rumors or what seems to be true because it's talked about so much. So, you know, congratulations again on doing a great job of getting the right information out there. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Stephanie Sarkis, author of Natural Relief for Adult ADHD. You can find out more about Stephanie by going to our website, stephaniesarkis.com.
Do you tend to overreact and let your emotions rule your interactions with others? Do you become defensive or find it difficult to see things from another's point of view? You're not alone. Despite the fact that we all have to deal with people in our daily lives, many of us have difficulties with interpersonal relationships. My suggestion? Pick up a copy of the Interpersonal Problems Workbook. This workbook combines powerful evidence-based techniques for strengthening relationships in all areas of your life, whether it's at home or work, with a significant other, a parent, or your child. To find out more about the Interpersonal Problems Workbook, go to www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com. Pick up a copy and improve your relationships.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Do you panic when you don't receive an immediate response to a text, email, or voicemail? Do you become clingy or demanding when you feel someone pulling away? Do you stay in unhealthy relationships because it's better than being alone? Or do you avoid relationships altogether? If you answer yes to any of these questions, you may struggle with fear of abandonment. This fear can trigger intense feelings of jealousy and anxiety that result in unhelpful behaviors that ultimately sabotage your relationships. Psychologist Michelle Skeen's powerful book, Love Me, Don't Leave Me, will help you develop a new perspective about yourself and others, and you will learn to recognize and change the behaviors that are hurting your relationships. You deserve to have closer, loving, and lasting connections. To find out how, go to www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com.
Welcome back to Relationships 2.0. I'm chatting with Dr. Stephanie Sarkis. She is the author of Natural Relief for Adult ADHD, Complementary Strategies for Increasing Focus, Attention, and Motivation with or without medication. So one of the things that you mention in the book is touch therapies.
Right. Studies have found that when you have touch, that it actually changes the way your brain fires neuron-wise. It changes how it fires and where. And so there is something to this idea of hug therapy. Virginia Satir, a well-known marriage and family therapist, said you needed 6 hugs a day for survival, 8 for growth, or let's see, it was 6 for survival, 8 for maintenance, and 10 for growth. So there may have actually been a biochemical reason behind that.
So that's the oxytocin, right?
Right. Oxytocin also can raise dopamine, too. So when you're looking at treatments like massage, it could be the actual massage therapy that's helping, and it may also be touch that's helping people, too.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, what are pets helpful for people with ADHD? I know that it can be for people who struggle with other disorders.
Right. Pets can help people with lower their blood pressure. That's people not just with ADHD, but anyone. And again, like you said, you know, they help with depression, anxiety. Also studies showing that people with ADHD tend to have a higher level of stress than others, and having pets reduces that stress. So also, people with ADHD tend to have affinity for animals and for nature, and so sometimes having a pet helps them kind of connect with that that need for something involving the outdoors and nature. So it's very beneficial in a variety of ways.
So what do you attribute to the higher levels of stress to?
I think one of the biggest things is this loss of potential, that you have to work 5 times as hard as everyone else at your office to only get half the amount of work done. And
okay.
That really piles up over time. Or at school, you knew you were a straight-A student, but you were getting B's and C's and couldn't figure out why. And over time, that really adds up. Add to that relationship stress, you know, where people are not communicating messages correctly. And again, mm-hmm. It starts building up and building up. And people with ADHD also are more likely to file bankruptcy, have a higher credit card debt, and so again, that adds on to the stress, and more likely to have physical illnesses too. So again, there's this kind of, again, piling up or snowballing of issues that can contribute to stress level.
Are the physical illnesses due to the their challenge with self-care?
Sometimes it's due to self-care. Other times there's some genetic links we're not sure about. Celiac disease, much higher rate of that when you have ADHD in the general population, for example. Diabetes, that could be linked genetically, or it could be issues with dietary habits. So it could be a little bit of genetics, a little bit of behavioral practices. It's really kind of unclear at this point.
Well, so is it diabetes like type 1 or type 2? Because isn't the adult onset... Oh, type 1.
Yeah, it's the type 1, so it's unclear whether
it's... Oh, so that is genetic, right?
I'm sorry?
Oh, isn't the type 1 the genetic, and the type 2 is the onset from, like, diet and...
Right. It's genetic, and also diet makes an impact, too, as to whether you're going to keep your insulin levels okay, or if you're also taking your medication as prescribed, which can be tricky for people with ADHD as well.
Oh, right. Yeah, you also mentioned in the book that a higher rate of unemployment for people with ADHD.
Right, this is pretty shocking. So in the general population, 67% of people are employed full-time. It's only 22% of people with ADHD.
Wow. I mean, you really are targeting a really vulnerable population. There's so much that they're having to... work, you know, fight against, right?
Right. Yeah, it's a serious disorder. I mean, people with ADHD do have some pretty neat characteristics like creativity, and also I think they're great kind of personalities, bon vivant kind of personalities, but also there's a lot of stuff kind of under the surface, like much higher rate of depression, anxiety. Also in teenage girls with ADHD, a higher rate of self-injurious behavior and suicide attempts. So again, this is a serious disorder.
So do you feel like also the seriousness of this is minimized?
I think like, when we get a blood or saliva test that tells us, yes, you have depression, yes, you have ADHD, yes, you have anxiety, I think a lot of the stigma will go away. Because at this point, the best thing we can do is make a really educated guess, you know, through our clinical interviews, through our assessment scales, through family history. That's very important because ADHD is genetic. So until that point, until we have a definitive kind of numbers test, the stigma, I think, may still be around. But fortunately, the more research that we have, we're finding there is a very strong genetic biological correlation, and there have been several genes identified related to ADHD.
That's really great news then. So there's a lot of research money that's going into studying ADHD?
Especially from a neurological, biological, genetic standpoint, yes. Very highly genetic. So if you have ADHD, there's about a 75% chance that at least one of your parents carries the genes for it. So on the scheme of things, very highly inheritable. And we're finding that environment may play a role, but it's a much, much smaller role than the genetic piece.
Wow. I also want to mention, I saw on your website, you have a scholarship.
Right, for college students with ADHD, correct.
Yeah, Master talk Chan. About that. That's so nice.
Oh, thanks. So, that's through a big national organization for ADHD called CHADD, CHADD.org. And not only do they have scholarships, they also have a free national clearinghouse of ADHD information that's been reviewed, vetted by professionals. And you can reach that through their website at CHADD.org or also help and then the number 4, ADHD.org. Really great set of tools, you know, for kind of, again, parsing through, you know, what's valid research and what doesn't have a lot of data backing it up. So great resource. Again, it's chadd.org.
And people can go to your website, Stephanie Sarkis, and find out more as well.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the supplements that you discuss in your book. So the there's medication that's prescription only. That you talk about in the book, but this is all stuff that you could go into like a health food store and get.
Right. So supplements include things like vitamins, minerals, herbal supplements, omegas, and there have been issues with dosage. Pharmaceuticals or medications that are prescribed have pretty tight limits on them or really tight restrictions on their quality. It's not the same for supplements. So there have been different milligrams found from bottle to bottle of an herbal supplement, and you have to be really careful with these. Kava is actually banned in 2 countries because of varying quality. You can cause some liver damage or liver failure.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's really important that if you are going to go a supplement route that you find a company that practices good quality assurance. And also just be aware that in placebo-controlled studies, which means giving people either an herbal supplement or a sugar pill, there's no difference in impact in ADHD symptoms. So herbal supplements have been found to not be effective.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, but like the omega-3s, like those capsules, if I had the jar in front of me, I would hold it up. But those are like good for everyone's brain, right? Or is that just a misconception of mine?
Well, I always tell people check with your doctor first because omegas can act as blood thinners. So if you're taking something like Coumadin, you just want to, again, check with your prescriber. But in studies of omegas in people with ADHD, it was found to be at least somewhat effective in helping with symptoms. So, again, it's just something you want to check with your prescriber about. But there has been more and more research coming out, especially in the next year. There's going to be several studies coming out about omegas and whether they're beneficial for ADHD. And the results are looking pretty promising.
And before we run out of time, let's talk about diet. And you suggest trying that, like, elimination diet to see if there are things that there are specific foods that might be contributing to someone's symptoms. Where do you come down on the whole gluten-free thing? Where are you at with that?
Last year found that a gluten-free diet was helpful for people with ADHD and celiac disease to help with the celiac disease, but it did not help people just with ADHD. So overall, yeah, if you do have a sensitivity to gluten, then that can be helpful, but overall was not found to be effective in solely treating ADHD symptoms. So when we talk about elimination diets, it's more that not that the additives or preservatives are causing ADHD, it's more likely that there's an already inherent or existing allergy or sensitivity that people with ADHD are just more prone to having, whether that's due to genetic links or some other factor we're not aware of yet.
And what about ADHD and alcohol for people?
Well, there's a 5 times higher rate of alcoholism than people with ADHD.
Wow.
So they're, again, more prone to substance abuse, and overall substance abuse is 6 times higher. When you take medication for ADHD, your risk rate drops back down to that of a control group, meaning that it's almost like you went back to not having ADHD. So just something that people with ADHD need to be really careful of is their alcohol intake and noticing when they might be using too much or using it to self-medicate.
Mm-hmm. And how does that interact with the stimulant medication if people are on prescription medication?
What it can do with stimulants and also some antidepressants is it can kind of, the alcohol content can hit you all at once, right away, or all of a sudden, you know, you're on the floor because you don't realize how much you've actually been drinking. So it's just something to be aware of. You know, in a perfect world, if you're taking prescription medication, you wouldn't be doing any kind of other substance. But, you know, realistically,
right,
it's just something to check with a prescriber about because, yeah, it can impact how the body absorbs alcohol.
So interesting. This is such a great book, and your references are like dozens of pages long in really teeny font. So you did a tremendous amount of research. And it shows, it's a great book. Anyone who is struggling with ADHD should pick this up and add it to their resources. Thank you so much, Stephanie. It's always a treat to have you. Again, you can find out more about Stephanie by going to her website, stephaniesarkis.com, or go to my website, and there's a link to her website. And you can also listen to my past podcasts with her. And thanks again, Stephanie. Have a great week. Everyone, stay cool. It's hot out there. It's even hot in San Francisco, and it's never hot in San Francisco.
You're invited to join Michelle Skeen, psychologist, author, and host of Relationships 2.0 on this station. On Michelle's radio show, she has guests who present their unique perspective and expertise on topics that cover all aspects of relationships. If you want to improve your relationships, and let's face it, we all have room for improvement, tune in to Relationships 2.0 with Dr. Michelle Skeen. If you miss Michelle's show, or if you're interested in listening to past podcasts, you can go to her website at www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com. So listen to Michelle's podcast, or keep listening right where you're at. Relationships 2.0. Tune in and improve your relationships.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a Wounded Warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Do you tend to overreact and let your emotions rule your interactions with others? Do you become defensive or find it difficult to see things from another's point of view? You're not alone. Despite the fact that we all have to deal with people in our daily lives, many of us have difficulties with interpersonal relationships. My suggestion? Pick up a copy of the Interpersonal Problems Workbook. This workbook combines powerful evidence-based techniques for strengthening relationships in all areas of your life, whether it's at home or work, with a significant other, a parent, or your child. To find out more about the Interpersonal Problems Workbook, go to www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com. Pick up a copy and improve your relationships.